Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 388. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing absolutely great, Kevin. How are you?
I cannot argue. I was really glad. The last couple of years, I've watched all of Wrestle Kingdom. I would say I watched 9 and 10 in their entirety. For whatever reason, I wasn't able to get around to viewing it before this show. But thankfully, I did take the time out to catch the Kenny Omega versus Kazuchika Okada match. And that was worth the money I did not pay for it. And I would imagine that since you paid 999 yen or whatever it was, that you felt like that was yen well spent.
That was yen very well spent. I have thus far watched the match twice, once in English and once in Japanese. Definitely glad I watched the English version first, but the Japanese version definitely provides a different atmosphere for the match entirely, with the even though you don't understand what they're saying, the enthusiasm of the Japanese announcers just jumps through the TV at you. So once again, two different experiences, but just one absolutely fantastic match.
I mean, it's one of those things where sometimes when you hear the hype going into a match like that, I feel like maybe you end up nitpicking it more than you would if you just went into it, went into the match fresh. But, you know, that the hype surrounding it did not ruin the viewing for me at all. I mean, that match was, it was outstanding.
Oh yeah, it absolutely was. I was able to watch it within 24 hours. I did my best to avoid, a lot of social media and any of the buzz surrounding it. So I was completely fresh. Did not know who won. Did not hear any of the praise the match was getting. So I got a real fresh, real unbiased viewing of it, and it was just an incredible match, a match that built a long match, 48 minutes. Now once again, and who knows, if I have not watched a lot of New Japan in the last, since I try to watch the big shows, they usually do quarterly or so big shows, or every other month or something maybe. But I don't watch I don't typically subscribe to New Japan World, although there's a very good chance that I will continue to through the months, because I was so impressed with the experience there. But there's the things that, if you followed it, New Japan for the last few months, and their regular Japanese language shows on New Japan World, that in the weeks and months leading up to the match, they do a lot of tags with Okada and Omega on a different side. They don't spend a lot of time in the ring together, but they build on things.
Oh.
At some point, and they reference it. Carino and Kelly, Kevin Kelly and Steve Carino referenced it, that at some point Omega had put Okada through a table as part of an angle, and they pretty much spent the vast majority of the match building up to one table spot. Just think about this. Think about the psychology and the buildup of the anticipation to this one table spot.
Yeah, I guess I was not completely aware of the the one previous table spot, or the previous table adventures. But just the fact that looked like a legitimate table.
Oh yeah, it was. That bump Kenny Omega took was scary. I mean, the table didn't break all the way. The edge kind of propped up a little bit. And then, of course, they have that, you know, the New Japan, when they're at the Dome, they have the ring on a stage, and it looked like Kenny may have cracked it, hit his tailbone, like, on the edge of that stage, which is a, you know, and throughout the night, you know, that is a scary bump to take. I mean, I don't know if you know this or not, but in 1994, Ravishing Rick Rude was, and Sting were doing, you know, on loan from WCW at a WCW Domes, at a New Japan Dome show, and Sting did a plancha out to the floor onto Rude, and Rude landed right back first on that, on the stage, the edge of the stage.
And okay.
That's what ended his career.
Oh, okay.
So, there's definitely some details that that's all part of what made the match special. They literally, within the 48 minutes, worked just about every style you could think of into this match. You know, there was brawling, there was high flying, there was, you know, stiff, there was the typical, you know, chops, headbutts, you know, forearms, knees. There was, you know, head drop suplexes, including absolutely frightening one with the tiger suplex, the full Nelson suplex from the top rope from Omega to Okada. That was nuts. When Okada has fusion surgery one day, he'll remember that.
I mean, it was an appropriate thing to say, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I really worried about that one. I mean, that was one of the few times, like, because you could tell, because they did a number of spots outside, and you could just tell where, you know, they had padding there on that raised area, but they kept on kind of jumping over the guardrail into that area, and it just looked dicey every time.
Oh yeah. They took some stuff. I mean, they really went for it. This was their night. This was their match. You know, they. Now this is the thing with the way New Japan does business, and is when, you know, you work in tours, and, you know, few weeks on, a couple weeks off, few weeks on, a couple weeks off, so you do have more time. You do more, but you have more time to heal up. Japan is, you know, very, you know, they're, you know, quote-unquote house shows in between the big events. The big stars are typically work, you know, six, you know, tag team, you know, four, six, eight-man tag matches, so the big stars aren't taking that much during those type of matches.
Right.
But they were certainly, it's all indications were they were feeling it the next day and the rest of the week.
You could just see some of the wear and tear on their bodies. I mean, because there are just times where whether it's a chop fest or someone gets Singapore caned a lot, you know, it goes back to this. You know, the kind of joking, it's still real to me, damn it. You know, there's only so much of the offense that they can fake.
Hold on. Hi, Dave, if you're listening. I think he used to be a listener of this show. I'm not sure if Dave Wills from wherever the hell he's from still listens or not. But you're right. It's, they were definitely out to prove something.
It was just a fantastic match. I mean, I don't think we need to go over it blow by blow at this point, but because we've mentioned some of the highlights, and just the end with the trading of the it wasn't even really a trading of finishers.
Well, yeah, because that's kind of the brilliance of the match. Omega never hit his.
Yeah,
that's Omega's claim when, you know, when they get around to a rematch. You never took my best stuff. I took everything. I took everything from you over and over again, and still for you to finally beat me. Yeah, I mean, the spot I'm pretty sure that is could possibly be liberally stolen in some upcoming WWE main events is. The Okada grabbing Omega by the wrist and Omega just firing sharp blows at him, trying to get him to let go, and he never lets go of the wrist. I could totally see John Cena and AJ Styles stealing that, just liberally stealing that.
yeah. I mean, you could have Cena take a bunch of blows from Styles, and then have Cena go with the AA right after it.
Exactly, it was great. And I can't say I've ever seen it before. Once again, they came up with some really new stuff, some really creative stuff. They, you know, probably if you watch more New Japan, they probably played off of some previous stuff that they've done. Absolutely amazing match. It's hard to rank it as, you know, just say the greatest of all time. It's a hard thing to say since
right.
There's still the disconnect of not following it on a regular basis, not falling for that wrong. Still some things in the you know, wrestling culture that maybe that get lost a little bit, but. I'll easily call it the greatest non-WWE, non-WCW match I've ever seen. that I have no problem saying.
So I'm trying to think, was it Nakamura and Styles last year?
Yeah. That was amazing as well. Yeah, this raised the bar. Absolutely, for what? I mean, it raised the bar to a level that, man, oh. I almost feel bad for whoever's in the main event of the Tokyo Dome, you know, Wrestle Kingdom next year. Man, that's a high bar to try to reach.
Just
do your best and don't think about it. I guess it's probably my best advice. If the best wrestlers in the world want to take my advice.
From me to you, you deserve this. Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, I kind of agree with the end sentiment. Like, you just gotta, you can't really worry about that.
Right.
You know, because someone had to, well, actually, even with, Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, like, I was worried about the second one already, just because the first one was so good. You know, it's like, how can you live up to it? And then, you know, sometimes it does happen. You can think about Aliens. Yeah, you can absolutely think about Godfather 2.
right. Yeah, I mean, yes, and well, I would say that, it's a lock that Omega and Okada are going to meet again, and, you know, maybe sooner than later, but it could possibly be never. If certain rumors are true, or well, and the best part is, rumors started by Kenny Omega himself. Yeah, so he's definitely stirring the pot. He's taking advantage of all the buzz surrounding himself and the match itself.
And I can't, I cannot blame him one iota for that. He did say that he was going to take some time off in Japan. There were a number of people, including Dave Meltzer, saying that his contract is up at the end of the month. So if he doesn't have a contract, you know, and I guess that was kind of one of those interesting things. Like, I guess I didn't know, like you said, like not knowing the background of the story. It's hard to tell if Omega was going to win that or not. You know, like, sometimes you have at least a preconceived... I shouldn't say sometimes. Going into, you know, WrestleMania, I always have a preconceived notion of who's going to win.
Yeah, you do.
Whether that comes true or not is always another thing. But, this one, you know, I didn't really know... And, you know, kind of finding out about the contract status after the fact is something.
Now, there are people who, now, you know, in the latest from Meltzer, is there are people, you know, he talks to in Japan who are saying that, Omega is re-signed and he's just working an angle, but, you know.
Okay.
You know, Omega's saying he hasn't signed anything with anyone. who's trying to save face here, who's telling the truth. You know, a lot of what Kenny Omega said, including in an interview with Sports Illustrated, you know, it's still tinged with a little bit of kayfabe, as they say. He talked about, you know, after suffering such a huge loss, you have to refocus yourself. You have to, you know, you have to, you know, just, you know, what's what I'm looking for? I don't have the quote in front of me, but you have to redesign, rebuild, reclaim. Yeah, so a lot of what Omega says publicly is still can fit within a framework of, you know, being upset about losing the match and needed to go away to come back and get it back. I know in March New Japan runs a tournament where the winner gets a championship match, and you know, I would imagine that Omega would be in there, and if he's back and the favorite to win it. I mean, he doesn't, because New Japan is run like a, it definitely is booked as a sport. They try to, you know, have that real sports feel. You know, he was a challenger and he lost. He has no claim at a rematch unless he, you know,
works his way back up.
Works his way back. So yeah, they're definitely playing that, you know, playing out a long game with a rematch if Omega has back, you know, re-signed with them or still is going to. I mean, Omega's definitely, you know, he'll never be hotter. Or maybe, who knows? Maybe in a year or so he would be, but you know, right now, I mean, this is the time to play those games and to start that bidding war.
Yeah. If nothing else, you know, get a little more money for yourself, even if you decide to stay in Japan. You know, a bigger raise than the one that you were gonna get is still a bigger raise.
Yeah. Yeah, New Japan just needs to, you know, I know it's, I believe there's traditional Japanese business, you know, running with honor, and, you know, a handshake is your bond and all that, but they really need to stop, you know, start signing guys to multi-year deals, and they need to stop, you know, letting these deals run up in January and February. It's just, you know, the Tokyo Dome just becomes, you know, a one-stop shop for WWE at that point.
Yeah, well, and that was another thing, because, I mean, I did listen to Dave Meltzer on Steve Austin's show. I mean, he did say that the guys in Japan don't, not that they make bad money, but they still don't make WWE money, because I believe he said it was that New Japan is 1/20th. The size of the WWE?
Well, yeah. They have one country. WWE has the rest of the world. Gotta keep in mind, the only countries that have a strong national scene of their own are Japan and Mexico. I mean, there's people trying to get, obviously, you know, there's people trying to get, you know, a strong national promotion on British television, which WWE was already not happy about. I mean, the whole reason that there's the UK tournament going on this week on Saturday and Sunday on WWE Network is because you know that they try to deny it. It's because they want to, you know, plant their roots in the UK, and you know, who knows, you know, maybe they'll be over there, you know, trying to make some big deals, to get on network TV there themselves. I mean, who knows? But once again, you know, WWE is, you get the feeling that they're maybe bored, and they just want to make competition out of somebody.
Well, and I do think that at some point, I don't know if I want to say that they'd spread themselves too thin necessarily, but I mean, they can't have WWE trainers everywhere, I guess. So, I mean, there's still going to be some stylistic differences, I think, if they start, even if they start running their own promotion, you know, a WWE-backed promotion, like, I still feel like there's going to be a different style of wrestling, and it's going to give people...
I think there would be. I think, I think that they would, you know, a WWE promoted British product would still, you know, it would be to appeal to the British market and do the style of wrestling that's popular over there to a degree. I mean, obviously WWE is wildly popular over there, so I mean they love the British love their WWE.
Right.
But yeah, so again, I mean WWE, I mean New Japan is planning on, you know, expanding into many English countries. They got this. They're coming to Southern California in July for 2 dates. They're planning on going to the UK. They're planning on going to Australia. So, you know, they're going to English speaking countries, and you know the face on the poster, if he's there, is going to be Kenny Omega, the guy doing the radio interviews, the guy doing the local TV. It's going to be Kenny Omega. It can't be Okada. He doesn't speak the language.
Yeah, so it's kind of important that they keep him around.
Yeah, and WWE absolutely knows that. And once again, you know, they seem to be very protective of even losing a fraction of the their market share in the world, period. So, which, you know, if WWE's fired up and actually, you know, treating someone like competition, I guess that's a good thing. I mean, although they're, you know, being underhanded about it, I mean, that's kind of sucks, but, you know, if it makes the WWE product better, I mean, I guess more power to them.
Well, and like you said, like, New Japan is kind of at fault for it, and even some of these other promotions, like, I feel like Ring of Honor has started to try to lock guys up more. In general, not that they're even probably the level of competition that New Japan is to the WWE, but at least they're being smart enough to do something like that to try and help have a talent base instead of having, you know, a bunch of defections, or at least not have them as frequently, I would hope.
I mean, the relationship between ROH and New Japan has helped a lot because, like, the Young Bucks, okay, they're not allowed to work any other indies in the U.S. anymore, except for PWG. That's the only allowance that they're given for his U.S. indies. They can do anything internationally, but, you know, those come few and far between. You know, there's, you know, people out in South America, you know, promoting and, you know, using the Young Bucks and the Hardys as their main event. Hell, ROH is using the WrestleMania weekend is using Young Bucks and the Hardys as a main event. You know, because the Hardys are rightfully so refusing to sign any kind of exclusivity with TNA. That'd be the dumbest thing they could ever do, and they're not that dumb.
No. You can call them whatever else you want to. I'm not going to put them in the dumb category.
Right, no. So, once again, Young Bucks pretty much work ROH and New Japan and a few select other dates. If New Japan can get that for, you know, I mean, ROH can get that for a good chunk of their roster, then more power to them. I mean, I guess it sucks for every, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry indie promotion out there, but, you know, that's the business now.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost it never would be a fair fight.
No. Well, I mean, if once again, when people, you know, WWE's not going to get involve themselves in any kind of contract tampering or anything of that nature. So this is very clear when it comes to Kenny Omega and, you know, his ops, what he does. His contract ends on January 31st. There is no chance of him being in the Royal Rumble.
Yes, that is true. And really, well, I guess Styles could have started later than the Royal Rumble, but it does kind of make it tough to start after that and try to get something meaningful going for yourself.
You could absolutely do it. I'm sure if they signed Kenny Omega, they would make it big. I'm fairly certain he'd bypass NXT and they'd bring him right to the main roster. Just, you know, you gotta strike while the iron's hot there and put him in something for us.
Uh, Yeah, I mean, they certainly have enough people around for him to go up against. So, they could. I guess I just think that the Rumble is just a good place for a first appearance, as it was for AJ Styles. It gets your name out there. You don't really I guess I don't expect a surprise entrant to win the Royal Rumble ever. Like, it's always someone that was already set to be in there.
Right, no. And this, I guess, before we went on the air, we were talking about how we would transition. I guess this is I guess
Yeah.
our good transition fell into our lap. Let's talk about this. Royal Rumble is ridiculously stacked. So, yeah, you really don't need to. I mean, I guess if Finn Balor can be ready, you could maybe put him in there, and maybe he could win. Maybe he or be impressive. But other than that, I don't know if you need any big debuts or anything, or maybe one or two surprises, former superstar surprises.
Yeah, the former superstar surprises are always popular, and like you said, like there are enough big names in there already, just with Undertaker, Cena, Goldberg, and Lesnar. We have plenty of star power just with those four.
Did you mention Cena's facing Styles? Cena's not in the Rumble.
Oh, I forgot about that.
So Undertaker, Lesnar, Goldberg. I mean, obviously, then you got then you got the big stars on the regular roster. You got Rollins, Jericho, Ambrose, Miz, New Day, Braun Strowman, who's obviously gonna get a monster push. Baron Corbin, who's probably gonna get something of a push, maybe something. Not quite at the level of Strowman, but he'll get his eliminations. Maybe he'll come out with a feud with somebody.
Yeah, I would imagine because you mentioned that your TV pooped out on you and did not allow you to watch Baron Corbin versus John Cena. And I don't know how or why it happened exactly, but Baron Corbin at least seems to have turned something of a corner in my opinion.
That's good.
I liked that the WWE was smart enough to do another video package with Baron
Yeah,
Corbin.
I did see. That was really good. That was reminiscent of the stuff they did with Stone Cold Steve Austin, before he faced Bret Hart. He's in an alley, there's a fence, it's gritty. Yeah, I like that a lot. I always like when they do stuff like that.
Yeah, and it fits his character, and he isn't the strongest in-person mic work guy, so to hide it as best you can is a good plan.
Stuff like that is good. Is absolutely what they need to be doing with Corbin. Yeah, I mean, and I'm glad the match is fine. I am glad that, even though I didn't see it, I'm glad Cena won. I know there was some debate about whether you have Baron Corbin lose at this point. You know what? You don't have him beat Cena because Cena hasn't actually had a big win in forever, it seems. And
Yeah.
if you have an AJ Styles, cause disqualification, then whatever work you've done with Corbin and Cena just gets forgotten about, because people are just disappointed about a Buck Venis. So if you give him a clean, if you give Corbin enough offense, if you make him look good, and he loses to the top guy in the business for the last 15 years, I don't think he loses anything, really. As long as he performs well.
Yeah, like you said, like he has a chance to recover in the Rumble itself. And I agree, like he doesn't seem to be on the upswing that that Braun Strowman is on right now.
And no. And once again, this WrestleMania—it remains to be seen how everything is matched up for it to be a strong show. But for pure star power, this is going to be the biggest show in years. I mean, that's pretty much a guarantee. Again, everything depends on how everyone's matched up. But you know, this is going to be such a deep lineup that I don't know if there's much room for Baron Corbin in the top five matches.
Yeah.
You might be able to squeeze Strowman in if he's facing, you know, Reigns or Undertaker or someone of that nation. But I don't know if there's room for Corbin in a deal like that.
Yeah, he'll get something, I would imagine, better than last year, which was pre-show with Kalisto.
No, that was Ryback.
Oh.
Corbin won the Battle Royal.
Yep. Yep. And they even mentioned the Battle Royal left and right, so I don't know why I thought that.
It's Corbin's faced Kalisto 100 times. It just all blends together.
Well, yeah, that's why it's... I have gotten a little bit of a kick out of everybody saying Baron Corbin's had a great first year, and I'm like, the guy was kind of buried after the win.
They really didn't do much with him. He really didn't have the opportunity to show much. I think that, you know, what they're doing with him right now is all right. It's good for him. I'm still not entirely convinced, but, you know, once again, at least they're picking somebody. You know, they're picking somebody to push pretty far. So, you know, we'll see how that all goes.
Yeah. As far as, and I guess that's why I mentioned that I still feel like he's kind of on the upswing. Like, I mean, it's been, what, 3 or 4 matches or something like that? You know, it hasn't been that much. Like, he still has a while to go to prove that he can stay in that area of the card. So, yeah, I mean, tonight was just another step, and we'll see how things go from here. And Cena, Styles, Corbin. Well, I don't know. I guess Dean Ambrose would be next on the list for SmackDown.
Oh yeah. That was definitely an entertaining opening 7. I really got a kick out of that. I think that Miz and Ambrose play absolutely great off of each other. So, I'm glad to see this thing continuing. Got me curious if they're gonna, you know, if they're gonna, train Renee Young to get through a mixed tag at some point, possibly even at WrestleMania. I mean, that seems like a logical endpoint for all of this. But who knows where exactly they're going? I mean, I guess that's what I would do if you got nothing else better for Ambrose, I guess. I guess that would be a good option.
Yeah, it does feel like that is ripe for the happening, and I kind of feel like I'm waiting for that other shoe to drop, but they haven't really done that quite yet.
I mean, and it's obviously it's going to take time to get Renee ready, and hell, and Maryse hasn't even had a match in years, so you know, take your time with that one. Once again, Miz and Ambrose play really well off of each other, and you can get the. You can do the build up to, you know, a singles rematch between the two with, you know, Miz and his getting his lawyers involved and you know, again being the whiny heel that he is. Yeah, once again, I'm a big fan of this feud.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. The Miz is continued the good work. And I mean, Ambrose continues to amuse, I guess.
He really does, and it's so amazing how that period where he was the champion felt like he lost his edge, and as soon as he loses it, he gets his edge right back. He is a top contender. He is a great top contender. He's a great intercontinental champion. But I don't know if I see him making it back to the big one again. Although I'm sure at some point he will.
Well, that was kind of, and I'm trying to think of where I got that, where I got the thought from, and I feel like it was from Austin and Meltzer, but just the, oh yeah, because Meltzer was comparing Omega jumping to the WWE and just kind of naming off some of the other near top guys like Ambrose. And he was just saying how he's a better wrestler than Ambrose. And I meant to take a look to see if Ambrose is younger than Omega, because that was the other thing that about Omega is that, I mean, I guess I really took notice of him last year, but even Meltzer said that this past year was like his first great year.
Yeah, I'd say that. I mean, once again, I mean, there's the stuff that, people like Jim Cornette will hate him for, that he did, there's two kinds of wrestling in Japan. There's two types of wrestling federations in Japan. That serious stuff and the goofy stuff, where you see stuff like invisible wrestlers
Oh.
and mummies and things of that nature. And, Kenny Omega, cut his teeth in one of the goofy promotions and did stuff like, he had a full competitive match with a 9-year-old gymnast.
Oh.
And also had a match with a blow-up doll.
Yes, I do remember seeing the match with the blow-up doll. It was
Yeah.
kind of funny to I guess I hadn't put two and two together with those peoples or with that person. But yeah, I was just checking to see real quick here, but Ambrose is a couple of years younger than Omega. So I guess if he can develop when he's 32, Ambrose still has some time under his belt to maybe get up to that status.
Yeah, oh yeah. Ambrose is definitely Ambrose is Ambrose is pretty well pretty made. I mean, he's always going to be a top of the card guy or near top. So yeah, I again, Ambrose, I don't know if I even like the Ambrose Kenny Omega comparison. I don't know. Actually, I don't, again, it's good that there aren't guys that you compare each other to, because everyone should be an individual who fills a role that you should strive to play a role that no one else can take from you.
Yeah, and Ambrose certainly sets himself apart from everybody and in a good way.
He does, absolutely.
Well, I guess there is one last thing to me of interest with SmackDown. The continued blowing up of the Wyatt family.
And I will say, I thought that tag match was great. I really, really liked that match a lot. The Wyatts versus Orton and Bray Wyatt versus American Alpha. I thought that was a really good match. So yeah, once again, continuing to lose to American Alpha and putting them over. Once again, Randy Orton, takes a pinfall, to American Alpha. So
Yeah.
obviously he must like those guys. So. Which is good. So he's committed to putting them over, and meanwhile, telling the story of the Wyatt family exploding. Still questions as to whether or not this was all Randy Orton's plot plan from day one to split up, Wyatt and Harper. But who knows? This storyline has taken a number of different twists and turns over the
Yeah,
last few months.
it's one of those ones that to me, like, it's gotten to the point where it's just like, man, this just seems like too much work to do it this way.
Yeah. That is true. That is true. It did he really need to win the tag team championships with the guys?
Yeah, I mean, he could have blown up at Harper a long time ago, but they've kind of sussed it out in between.
Yeah. They definitely tempers definitely came to a head tonight, and including, Bray Wyatt taking a super kick from Luke Harper. What, Bray Wyatt not getting that mad at Harper about it that he turned against him and sided with Orton, walking away from the both of them. So once again, this story continues, and I'm intrigued to see where it goes.
Yeah, I mean, because they still can go with, despite my, skepticism, they can still do, Orton just being in it to destroy the Wyatt family. Like, I think that's too much work, but, they'll explain it as crazy Randy Orton Viper guy, likes to do it that way, and everyone will be like, oh, okay, sure. Everyone nods their head and goes along with it.
that's where it goes. Yeah, that's very true. That's exactly what will happen.
Oh, man. So, what was happening on Raw that that drew your interest?
Raw? Well, obviously the biggest thing on Raw was... Well, I guess we should talk about The Undertaker. Actually, you know what? Let's talk about the thing that dragged Raw down completely. Stephanie McMahon. Oh my God, was she at her overbearing worst. This entire show. Ugh.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, I know that Daniel Bryan... Most of the time now, I feel like Shane McMahon is kind of taking something of a hiatus from TV, but I can't say I really keep track of his number of appearances at this point.
Right, right.
But I mean, again, it's one of those show differences that's easy to point out. Like, I remember Daniel Bryan in the segment with Becky Lynch, and I don't remember him the rest of the show.
No, he was not in the rest of the show. And Shane, for some reason, was advertised for Talking Smack instead of Daniel Bryan, which is weird. So they have Shane there, but not on... it's a whole weird thing, but yeah. But it's just... The way that they write Stephanie, I know she doesn't write herself anymore. She's off the creative team. I don't know if she realizes how badly she comes off as just this condescending, castrating to the men... just dominant to the women character. Now, if they're going for, say, Stephanie's going to have a match at WrestleMania against, you know, Bayley or Sasha or some sort of a tag, and she loses, then I guess maybe you can argue that it's all worth it. But there's no guarantee that, number one, that this is leading to a match, and there's no guarantee that Stephanie's going to lose that match, so... there's ways to do this. You don't have to always be, look at your dad. He would get one up on Stone Cold every once in a while, but he showed ass, and backed down, and it was made the fool of, at least 50% of the time, if not more. Even Triple H, knows when it's time to take the beating or to be shouted down. But Stephanie is just gotta be the smartest person in the room, gotta get the last word. No one wants to watch this on television because it is, and I don't want to just make it a gender thing. It is your teacher, your boss, your spouse, your parent. That's what it comes off like. It's what you deal with in your real life, and you don't want to watch it on television.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of strange. Just even the fact that they go from one week of Stephanie and Mick being chummy to this week being that Foley's a problem if the Undertaker doesn't arrive. Okay, like, I mean, I guess I understand, but there's no need for that turmoil at this point.
No, there really isn't. It's again the inconsistencies in her character. One week she's pretending to be nice, the next week she's dropping all those pretenses and just being just full on heel again. Yeah, it just, and they're, you know, Mick Foley just comes off like such a sad character a lot of the time. Once again, he's a legend. Nobody wants to watch a legend be portrayed like that. A number of issues with the presentation of Raw versus SmackDown, and the authority, you know, how much the authority figures are factored into segment after segment, and how they're portrayed, you know, is probably the biggest factor in Raw. I mean, 3 hours and some of the, you know, the crappy segments you gotta throw in just to fill time or whatever. You know, it's part of it too, but
right.
It definitely, you know, the authority figures take away from the presentation, especially the week Stephanie's there. When Stephanie's not there, I think Mick Foley is better off when Stephanie's not there.
Because I feel like he doesn't end up appearing as much, at least. And then he's had several good promos with the likes of Sami Zayn, and I feel like there was someone else that he kind of... Well, Cesaro and Sheamus, not quite to the level of the Sami Zayn talking to, but still, it was there. I'm trying to think, but yeah, I mean, he just doesn't seem as intrusive, and maybe it is because he is something of a sad character. Although, thank God he just shaved his head because he looked way better this week.
He definitely looked way better. Thumbs up on a new look for Mick
Foley. Yeah. So that's
I guess now we can talk about The Undertaker. They built it up. He established that he's going to be in the Royal Rumble. He established that he goes wherever he wants, which is fine. That he's one of the guys who can say that he can do either show. I mean, they haven't decided.
I don't know if they decided
on his WrestleMania opponent yet, so they don't know if he's even going to be spend most of his time the next few months on Raw or SmackDown. So it's good to establish that now.
And again, like, as long as they don't have, like, the whole roster doing stuff like this, it's not a problem. If it's just right. The Undertaker doing something like this, you're like, okay, I can deal with this. But, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Once multiples start happening, you start scratching your head.
Yeah. Interesting. I guess maybe the most interesting part was they did make sure to have Braun Strowman on screen as he was watching from the back. They're definitely, you know, at least building up to them crossing paths in the Royal Rumble, and maybe sowing some seeds for a WrestleMania match, which I'm not. I'm kind of hoping against that one. I on a show that where they're already gonna do Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar, and it's still a mystery of what's gonna happen when you put Goldberg in a match that needs to take some time, and you're gonna do the ultimate, you know, special attraction gimmick match between Big Show and Shaq. You don't need another big. You don't need a third match where two big bulls, you know, collide. You know, especially when one's, you know, an older special attraction. I mean, I can live with, you know, Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman, because at least you got Reigns to Reigns, you know,
athleticism.
Reigns is athletic. Reigns can move around Braun Strowman.
Yeah.
Undertaker not so much. Undertaker is gonna need someone who can move around him.
That is very true. He needs someone to be the Flash to his Sizzle.
Absolutely. So yeah, I'm kind of hoping that they move away from that. I mean, obviously within the Royal Rumble, the framework of the Royal Rumble, the two. Hey, who knows? It might come down to the two of them as the last two.
Right.
Again, I still don't know who's gonna. I still I, can say that I've got a favorite in this Rumble. I guess maybe Undertaker would be my favorite if they're going to go with the last title run idea.
Well, and I guess that's the other thing that's kind of interesting is I guess I feel like there's a chance that Kevin Owens loses.
I think that, you know what, after what they did on Monday, it's definitely more likely they lose, I think. I think that
so
when you give Jericho the U.S. title, you free Roman Reigns up to win the Universal title, and you also set up in the future that, you know, Owens and Jericho's match at WrestleMania can then be for the United States title. So, you know, because it was an interesting, you know, moment in the reign, the Owens-Jericho dynamic. Because for the first time, Owens did something completely unselfish for Jericho.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they. Yep. I mean, he just let Jericho have that win.
Yeah, so, there's no better way or no other way to put that. And, yeah, like you said, like, it does seem pretty logical if the one buddy gets the other belt, the other one's gonna lose it. So, I mean, who the champion is, really on both brands, I guess, at this point.
I mean, I would say that it's... I think the Raw champion, the Universal Championship, has a better chance of changing hands, a much better chance of changing hands than SmackDown Championship. I think right now it's a total push between Styles and Cena. I don't know what way they're going. I know that there's talk that, you know, everyone in the company is very well aware of what happened at the Tokyo Dome. They're planning a bunch of matches with, you know, big some older dudes, you know, colliding with each other. So you want your best work. You also want to showcase your best workers in big matches, and obviously there's no one better than AJ Styles, so maybe you do want AJ Styles going into WrestleMania.
Yeah, but I guess those kind of things, just because Styles and Cena are kind of a toss-up, and, you know, again, as we just noted, since there's probably a better chance now that Owens loses the title, like, who wins the Rumble itself is always dependent on who the champions are.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if Owens retains, Jericho's in the discussion for a Rumble winner. If he loses, then he's not, because they're not, because Chris Jericho versus Roman Reigns is not a WrestleMania main event level match.
Correct. I would agree, at least at this point.
It's almost a stretch the way Jericho has been portrayed these last few months, especially with the losses, with all the losses he's taken, that, you know, for Jericho to be the WWE Championship. So I like the little further down the card, you know, Owens and Jericho for the U.S. Championship. I like that.
Yeah.
So, again, I mean, you want to go all the way with Braun Strowman? Another question is, they really haven't said whether or not the winner, obviously Undertaker can do whatever he wants if he wins, but does everyone get the right to choose the other brand champion to face at WrestleMania?
What, like Stephanie would choose who faced AJ Styles?
Remember when the past years when there was a bland split, they said that the champion got to choose.
Oh, right.
Which championship they went against. So, once again, so that throws other wrinkles into it, too. You don't have to stay in your lane, per se. That opens up other possibilities.
Yeah, agreed. So, yeah, with both of the title belts kind of being a little bit of a toss-up, it's kind of, you know, that makes it extra hard to me to figure out what is who the Rumble winner is going to be.
Right. Like, and also, there is one thing that's interesting is that it is no, I mean, it's already, the advertising is already out, you know. In February, SmackDown's getting the Elimination Chamber.
Oh.
So someone from Raw could win the Royal Rumble, and then SmackDown still has you know, the Elimination Chamber to determine their number one contender too. I don't know if that's exactly, that means anything, because I guess you could throw anything in the Elimination Chamber one. But
yeah, it could be a regular match with the champion.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, it's kind of hard to set that one up right now. But yeah. I guess it's good to be this intrigued.
I'm very intrigued. I hope that, you know, overall Raw does improve, especially since I will be attending two Raws in 2 weeks come between February and March.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
That is...
While I'm visiting my family in February, I'll be attending Raw in Green Bay, and then 2 weeks later, the final WWE show ever at Joe Louis Arena.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, that is packing them together. I forget.
But it's mania season, and you know, I'm sure there'll be guests. The special guests will be appearing, and you know, hopefully, they'll be within. They'll have their shit together by then.
Yeah, it's always kind of funny. I think Jeremy and I, for years at this point, have made fun of how the WWE got their shit together at WrestleMania or at Royal Rumble time. So I would expect that to happen as it almost always does. Anything else to cover of note, or have we wrapped this puppy up?
I think we've pretty much wrapped this puppy up.
Okie dokie. Well, I bought a 6-pack recently, and we made some chili with it. Some bourbon barrel aged Arrogant Bastard, which is an offshoot of Stone Brewing, and it's pretty tasty. I would recommend it if you like the strong ale style. It's not too bourbony. Any beer that says drink fresh is a friend of mine. So definitely the Belltime beer this week is that. And then I can go, I'm at DeFrango11. He's at Chris Calamita. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Everybody, have a good night.
Later.